This is the Inch Podcast, a production of InsideCollegeHockey.com. Now, let's send it to our podcast host, Joe Vedashevsky.
This is the InsideCollegeHockey.com podcast, recorded Selection Sunday, March 22nd, one of the exciting days of the year, and certainly the next 3 weeks, some of the most exciting of the year in college hockey. Pleased to get ready to talk about what's coming up with the national tournament, what went down at the conference tournaments, and we've got a distinguished panel. You guys are back to being distinguished. Gathered here tonight, we'll start with Hockey East senior writer Jeff Howe. Hello, Jeff.
What's up, Gladdy? I feel like I'm about to do a Journey rendition with this microphone I got here out in the East, but I'm ready to go.
You are absolutely making it happen with you're adjusting for the playoffs. You're adjusting your game.
Apparently, I've got you stumped so much the fact that I'm making it happen.
I love it. You always come through. Also, from the great District of Columbia, where we'll all be in 3 weeks' time, Inch editor Nate Ewell. Hello, Nate.
Just a little advanced scouting down here.
Advanced scouting, yes. What did you think of the conference tournaments?
Loved them.
Good.
I wish I could have watched the game live that you were at in Albany last night, but it did make the clicker movement a little bit easier.
Yeah, it was good. And honestly, you didn't miss a ton.
We can talk about this, obviously. I think I saw what Yale's made of. So.
Yeah, exactly.
Looking forward to it.
Exactly. Inch editor Mike Eidelbus in the great state of Michigan, mid-Michigan, as it were. How's it going, boss? How was Lion King?
Lion King was wonderful.
Good.
It started the way it ended. I didn't know that.
Yeah?
The circle of life.
You got it, buddy.
The lion die.
Kind of breathy on that microphone, aren't you?
He's also on the treadmill.
I thought maybe he was reporting outdoors with Jim Cantore.
Also... Never mind.
What was that?
He's not here.
No, I lost you guys. I'm here. Can you hear me?
Well, now we can.
All right, I'm back.
I just intro'd Jess Myers and we had silence.
Yeah, I heard also and then like a moment of silence.
Yeah, I heard that too. You know what it is? I think it's sunspots.
Ah, yes. Okay. Well, I'm here. Good to be here.
All right. Well, good. Let's start with, I guess, the NCAA tournament. That's kind of the big thing that's going on these days.
Great place to start.
Yeah, and people know by now, but let's just make sure that people know. East Regional will be in Bridgeport, Connecticut. The top seed in that region is Michigan. They'll play Air Force in the first round. The second semifinal in that regional will have Yale versus Vermont. The West Regional in Minneapolis will also be Friday, Saturday, as will the Bridgeport games. Denver's the top seed there. They'll face Miami. Plenty of backstory in that game. And Minnesota Duluth will play Princeton in the other semifinal. Plenty of inch backstory in that game. We'll get to that later on. Midwest Regionals in Grand Rapids. Notre Dame is the top seed there. They'll play Bemidji State College Hockey America champions. Northeastern in Cornell is the other game in that region. And the Northeast Regional in Manchester, New Hampshire, will see Boston University versus Ohio State and North Dakota against New Hampshire. BU is the number one seed in that region. Let's start with the Minneapolis region, and we'll start with two WCHA teams that will play there. None of those are the Minnesota Golden Gophers on their home ice. They did not make the tournament this year, but Denver did and Minnesota Duluth did. Jess, you obviously got a good look at those teams this weekend. What did you think?
I got a good look at those teams, and I got a last look at the Gophers, as it turns out. Very interesting tournament for a lot of reasons, most of which I wrote about yesterday, but just the fact that it had never been done before, that a team had won three games in three nights. Minnesota came close last year. St. Cloud State came close a few years ago, but good tournament, not a lot of goal scoring. The five losing teams in the five games combined score a total of two goals, so goaltending was obviously a pretty big deal.
Well, that's how you lose.
that is how you lose. That's a roadmap right there. Yeah. That's the way to do it. Interesting last night, that championship game. I had said this before going into the game that, you know, kind of the roadmap, if you're going to win that game and win your third game in three nights, is you got to get an early lead and you've got to just defend like crazy because you're going to run out of gas. That script followed for two periods, but then it just never really happened the way I thought in the third, because Denver had one shot in the third. So UMD actually seemed to get stronger in the third period, and Denver didn't seem to have the urgency or the gas. Now, why would they have urgency? They knew they were going to be a number one seed. They knew they were fine. All it meant was defending their trophy, and I don't know how much that turned out to mean to them.
Well, can you take this time to apologize to the podcast listeners?
I'd like to offer an unequivocal, sincere, and heartfelt apology. I thought she was 21. Oh, no, I mean for something else.
Yeah. It's supposed to be 18, Jess. Come on now. 21 ain't that bad.
I was in South Dakota. The laws are different, but anyway.
All right, let's mention what you were apologizing for.
No, I was wrong about my alma mater.
Yeah, you said they couldn't beat CC.
Absolutely not. I had no faith. I had lost faith. I had watched them three games in a row where they had leads and blew leads and had a good shot at home ice and blew that. And I thought, boy, wrong time to be having these problems and wrong time to be going out to Colorado Springs to play on a big sheet versus the last year's league champions. And, boy, they proved me dead wrong and proved a lot of people wrong. So congratulations to the Bulldogs and to Scott Sandelin on their second NCAA appearance during his tenure at coach. And we'll be interested to see what they do on another big sheet in Minneapolis.
Is Kevin Pates interested in the recent developments?
Absolutely.
Good.
And Kevin and I had a nice talk over the weekend about some of our opinions and how those opinions fell short.
Oh, good. Good. One thing that I noticed about Minnesota Duluth, and we kind of brought it up, is that they've had a tendency to just have huge swings from horrible to excellent. Or at least from below average to pretty good. Yep. How is there any indication of where those might start and where they might end?
Or does it just happen? it just kind of seems to happen. I mean, there's no real sensical pattern to it, I would say. You have to kind of like the situation they're going into, not only as well as they're playing right now, but playing the regional games 150 miles from campus in a building that they know very well. There will be a lot of Bulldog fans there. Interestingly enough, this past weekend, rivalries notwithstanding, especially last night, the Gopher fans that had tickets showed up and cheered for the Bulldogs, which was, I guess, a bit of a surprise, but maybe not surprising. I suppose if you're a Minnesotan and a Minnesota hockey fan, you're going to cheer for a Minnesota team instead of a team from Denver. I know a lot of Gopher fans aren't exactly enamored with George Gwazdecki, too, and that goes back a long ways, so maybe that was part of it.
Yeah, I think the Duluth versus Minneapolis rivalry is probably more important to Duluth.
Absolutely.
Than it is to Minneapolis. They probably view Wisconsin, North Dakota, and maybe even Denver as easier teams to hate, I should say.
Don Lucia has made this point, and it's a valid point, that, you know, for 7 WCHA teams, the Gophers are their arch rival.
Yeah, exactly.
And the Gophers have, you know, one or two arch rivals, and that's probably North Dakota or Wisconsin, depending on the year.
Yeah.
But yeah, every place the Gophers go, it's the big game for wherever they visit. You know, the exceptions being probably Anchorage, because Fairbanks is a bigger deal for them, and then CC Denver is probably a bigger rival than the Gophers.
Right, right. Minnesota Duluth's first-round opponent is Princeton. That's a team I got a good look at, of course, this weekend in Albany and throughout the season covering ECAC hockey, or seasons. And this team is just deep and solid. Their aggressiveness might hurt them at times, as mentioned in our preview capsules this posted earlier Sunday afternoon. But I think that's a team that might like playing on a bigger sheet. They play four lines, they roll four lines, they expect to get scoring and contributions throughout their lineup. And if they can get into a game with a lot of flow and back and forth, that seems to be when they're best suited to success. So I think this matchup is just going to be a terrific one. And Zane Kalemba and Alex Stalock certainly are two very, very strong goalies. That'll be a good game, and I'm glad it's a nice Friday night game, you know, late after pretty much everything else has ended, so that the true college hockey fans can find that one on the tube and tune in. Teams they probably don't know a lot about, but should be a great, great game.
I saw Princeton play last year at the regional in Madison against North Dakota.
Yeah,
and I was impressed by what I saw of Princeton then. I mean, that just seemed to be really an up-and-coming program. I haven't seen them play this year, but, yeah, if that was any indication of what they were building on, that should be a very good game.
They return everybody except one guy from that team.
Wow.
Yeah.
I just wanted to add, I mean, because going into this tournament, you know there are two teams that a lot of teams aren't really going to want to face, and that's Duluth because of what they just pulled off in the WCHA, and then Princeton because of Zane Kalemba, who might be the best goalie in the country, and they end up facing off against each other. So without question, except for the fact that nobody really knows anything about either of these teams on a national scale, this is definitely, I mean, it can't find a more intriguing matchup in the first round other than Princeton and Duluth.
You know what? Denver and Miami might be another one, and that's right right in the same region. Bus, talk a little bit about this matchup and what you expect to see out of there. I'm curious, and we'll talk about this a little bit later on, I'm curious to see how all the teams who had last week off will respond. You know, Miami, Bemidji State, New Hampshire, Vermont, you know, see what they got going.
Yeah, I am too. And, you know, the other thing that will be interesting to see. And, you know, this isn't a new thing. Denver played Miami, I think, back in 2004, the year they won their first title. They played a first-round game out in Colorado Springs. But, you know, I'm always interested to see kind of, you know, obviously Rico Blasi played for George Gwozdecky at Miami and then was an assistant for George at Denver before he took over at Miami. And, you know, so obviously there's no secrets. You know, both guys know what the other guy is going to do. And, you know, it's always interesting to see if, you know, what kind of little twists and tweaks that they might come up with in preparation for this game. And, you know, the last time these guys played in the tournament, it was a very close game. It was, I think it would ended up 3-2 when, you know, Denver scored a third period goal to win the game. You know, Miami has had the time off, and, you know, you kind of wonder about that lag, but in this case, I'm not so sure that it's not a benefit for them, because Denver, I think, is dragging a little. Just, you know, they've had, if you watch any of the broadcasts this past weekend, you know that they're depleted in at center. Tyler Rugsegger hurt his knee in the first round. I believe it was a knee, actually. I shouldn't say that without knowing for sure. Against Anchorage in that series, and he's done for the year. Tyler Bozak, who got hurt back in December, you know, has kind of been rumored here for a couple weeks to be coming back, and this was supposed to be the weekend he was supposed to get back in the lineup. Well, he's not back, so you know, Denver's down to more or less two centers. Although they had a third center in there this weekend, you know, I think you're starting to see a little bit of fatigue wear in on these guys. They've really battled a lot of different injuries over the course of the year, and yeah, every team does that. But you know, this has happened to some seriously important guys to what they do. I mean, you know, they're a two line scoring team when they've got. When they've got Bozak in there and Rugsegger, and now, you know, that depth has obviously been diminished quite a bit. So, you know, I think it helps Miami out a little bit here to have the week off. And I just don't know, you know, especially watching Denver yesterday. And even I think you kind of saw it a little bit in the third period against Wisconsin on Friday that I don't know how much they have left in the tank. They looked pretty spent. Especially Saturday against Duluth.
all indications that we got during the Final Five was that Bozak will be back this weekend for the regional. And in fact, he had that on his Facebook page recently too, that he's looking forward to being back this weekend. So, good news for the Pioneers.
If it's on the internet, it must be true.
Absolutely.
Miami went through this 2 years ago. They lost their quarterfinal series in the playoffs against Lake Superior State, then had to wait it out and got into the tournament and actually won their first round game against New Hampshire at Manchester. So the veterans on that team will have been through this situation before.
So that's right.
They can
that's
draw. Right. They can draw on that experience.
I don't know, Jess. Maybe you can. You know, you were in St. Paul and you saw the Pioneers. I just thought they looked. They were. I thought they were dragging. And you know, I mean, Anchorage really took them to the wire in the first round.
They talked about that. What a tough series that was, and how that took a lot out of them. You know, and they were kind of fortunate. I wouldn't say fortunate, but they were worked hard to get that shutout they got against Wisconsin in the semis. In a pretty gritty game, and they showed again they can play that kind of gritty game. I mean, Denver is a big team, and they're a very talented team. Colborne goes 6'5". Patrick Vierkosch is a 6'4" kid, so they can play that game. The downside is they're on Lake Mariucci, and can you play that physical game on an ice sheet that big is a big question.
I think they can. The one thing that I like about Denver, especially on that big sheet, is that they're a really good passing team. If you've watched some of their games, when they're clicking, their puck movement is unbelievable. And I mean, even in tight quarters where you'd think you'd never be able to get a puck through, I mean, some of their passing is just, it's really unbelievable. And you know, I like the thought of, you know, a Colborne operating with some space and some time. Because I think he can. I think he really is a magician with the puck and can make a lot of things happen.
Quick little side note on Vierkosch, by the way. Most of the Pioneers got mohawks for the playoffs. Vierkosch went to the first press conference with a full head of hair, and so somebody asked, you know, why didn't you conform with the rest of the team? He said, well, he was playing in junior 1 year. The team got mohawks, and he'd been on this really hot streak and got a mohawk and went scoreless in three games, and they lost all three. So. He's afraid of the reverse jinx and is not going to cut his hair.
Good idea.
Absolutely.
Minnesota Duluth did the same thing, right?
Minnesota Duluth also had mohawks, and the Gophers shaved their heads.
Oh, this is...
It's gotten almost silly, but...
What do you mean, almost silly? It's almost silly 10 years ago.
Wisconsin had, like, beards.
That's classic.
Yeah, you can grow a beard.
The hair dye, the mohawk.
I like when they bleach them, you know, when everybody comes out looking just white blonde. The Demolition Man look. I like that stuff.
Yeah, yeah. You're from Warroad, right?
how'd you know that?
because that was on your Facebook. And it was cool on the East Coast about 13 years ago. All right.
Okay. He got this new thing called the Sega Genesis. You got to check it out.
All right. Let's talk about the other Friday, Saturday regional. And Bus, I want to talk a little bit about what you just said about Denver, how they're a good passing team. A lot of the goals I saw and a lot of the games I saw from this weekend, a lot of teams are making those plays. You don't get to be at this point of the season without having that creativity and patience of playmakers. So I don't know that advantage is as great as it might be. I mean, a ton of the goals scored in Albany were that way. You know, Notre Dame's goals were scored, some of them that way, just in what I saw. Unfortunately, didn't get to see a lot of what went on in Boston, but I don't know.
A lot went on in Boston.
Yeah, I know. But just saying that I think that's less of an advantage. And I look at teams that can make those plays, and there, I think there's four of them at the East Regional in Bridgeport. When you've got Michigan, Yale, Vermont, and Air Force in that group. Really, really going to be a trying weekend for the goaltenders. Michigan has to be considered a very strong favorite because of experience. You know, they were a Frozen Four team last year, a little bit of unfinished business. Guys who were freshmen, key freshmen in that lineup last year are now sophomores. And Yale's making their first trip in a while, in almost 10 years. exactly 10 years, 11 years. Vermont Air Force has been there before. So I think that's going to be some good hockey to watch as well. And all those teams are dangerous, but again, Michigan has to be considered the team to beat in that group.
Yeah, I think you're right. But that said, you know, we talked earlier today about the matchups after the bracket was released, and you know that Michigan Air Force game. I mean, Air Force has obviously been close a couple times. They were taking games into overtime their first two times, and you know, Michigan's not going to overlook them. But I like the matchup. I think you know it would be a shock, but I wouldn't call it an upset. I guess is how I would say. And you know, we saw yesterday too at Joe Louis Arena on Saturday in that championship game between Michigan and Notre Dame. You know, Brian Hogan was in goal for Michigan, and you know he had a little bit of a rough outing, which is something he really hasn't had all year. So. You know, I think Air Force can obviously take advantage of Michigan. You know, both of those teams can score goals. And I think Air Force is a little better defensively than they have been in the last couple of years. You know, last couple of years they kind of had a lot of offense, but I think they're a little bit better in their own end this time around.
Yeah.
As compared to the last 2 years.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. The thing that I get to Air Force, when they play these teams, these powerhouse teams, you know, they've been in these games the last 2 years. This is their third straight year in this tournament. You know, and they've been in the mix and the upset, you know, possible, and then late or in overtime, it's kind of fallen off. And I think depth is what separates, you know, these powerhouse teams like, you know, Michigan and Minnesota from an Air Force. So maybe that's what catches up to them. Andrew Vogt getting back-to-back shutouts, though. He's doing a good job there.
Gladdy, I wanted to get into Volkening. I mean, I saw him last year in Worcester in the Northeast Regional, and that kid was an absolute stud in net, and he was one of the most exciting goalies I've seen in the last couple of years. I mean, the kid just makes some great saves, and he strikes me as somebody who can put a team on his back. I like Air Force a lot. I'm not going to sit here and lie and say that I watch them all the time or anything, but the way that they can put pucks on the net and with Volkening behind them in the crease, this is a team that if they won that regional as a 4 seed, it would not surprise me whatsoever.
I wouldn't be surprised either, to be honest with you. I think one thing that I noticed, and you know, this is from the stuff that Ken McMillan reported on from Rochester this weekend at the Atlantic Hockey Tournament. You know, Volkening did pitch back-to-back shutouts, but it, you know, Air Force's defensive philosophy, they did a good job of limiting the shots and keeping the shots from far away. And you know, a lot of the shots came from the perimeter, and they weren't getting a lot of in-close stuff. And you know, Mercyhurst isn't a bad offensive team, obviously. I think they're highest scoring team in the nation. At least they were heading into the weekend. So, you know, I think they're doing something right. On the defensive end too, and that, you know, I think that that game is very intriguing.
I gotta pull back a little bit on what you guys were saying, and that is, you said you wouldn't be surprised if Air Force won this regional.
I expect Michigan to win the game against Air Force, but it wouldn't surprise me, no.
It would be a surprise if Yale, Vermont, or Air Force won that thing. It would be the lead story going into D.C.
That's true, and I was going to bring this.
Bottom line, yeah.
Well, it would, but.
You know, you look at that Michigan Air Force, and that's a little bit of familiarity in terms of seeing these teams at this level. I'm really intrigued to see Yale, Vermont, and two teams that haven't been at the NCAA level in 10 years, more than 10 years.
Yeah. Yeah, that's going to be a great game.
Yeah, but I mean, if I had the choice to take Michigan or the field, I'd take the field in that regional. I like the other three teams a lot. I really do. And Air Force is a solid team from the reasons that I've said before. Yale and Vermont. Yale put out a strong message last week on what they did in the ECAC. In Vermont, I mean, I know the Catamounts have struggled in the last couple of weeks, but I think having a week and a half off heading into the tournament is actually the best thing that they could have asked for, because they've been playing probably their worst hockey in the last week and a half of the season. And if they can get back to the things that got them into being one of the premier teams in the country, at least through February, then they're a team that would not surprise me to get to the Frozen. I think that's a very, very balanced squadron of the field.
Like that. I actually like that question. If you were offered
Michigan
or the field, who would you take? I think I might take the field.
Well, you know what? We say the same thing about North Dakota when they're 8-12 at Christmas every year. When are we going to learn?
No, you're right. You're right.
I don't know. I mean, and
you're right.
I don't know. I would be shocked. You know what? To me, just looking at it again, this reminds me a lot of last year's Albany Regional. Michigan goes in there as clearly the top dog, but, you know, can St. Cloud win a couple games if their power play gets hot? Absolutely. You know, Clarkson's ECAC champs, can they win a couple games? Wouldn't surprise you. Is Niagara dangerous? Absolutely. But how does the story end? Michigan goes.
I think we've also seen in the last few years the parity in the whole league. You're seeing a lot of upsets that aren't really traditional upsets just because of how strong some of these teams are. I mean, how many times have we said it over the course of this season that BU and Notre Dame are the two best teams in college hockey, and after that the tier drops off, but it's very level from three to, I mean, however deep you want to go. So if you see a team like Air Force or Yale or Vermont or going into the other quadrants pull off these upsets and make it to the Frozen, I don't think you can be tremendously surprised.
Yeah, we've seen so many three seeds make it through to the Frozen Four in the last couple of years. So you're right. And this year especially, and we've talked about it the last three or four podcasts, after BU and Notre Dame, then what?
You could do that, you know, them or the field thing in the West, the region we just talked about with Denver.
Oh, of course.
Think take the field in that one.
Yeah, everyone would take the field on that one.
You can't do it with BU. You can't do it with Notre Dame because those teams are head and shoulders from what we've seen.
Well, you know what, though? I would, right now, I would be very tempted to take the field in the Northeast Regional only because of North Dakota. And I'm sure we'll get to that regional eventually, and I can be more specific.
Well, let's get to it right now.
Yeah, let's go.
All right, well, I mean, BU, their penalties are absolutely maddening, and I was having this conversation with a friend of mine who covers the league and has covered the league for a little bit longer than I have, and I said, you know, we were looking at BU, and there's no question that BU is one of the most complete team in at least the last 5 years in Hockey East. From top to bottom, they're more complete than BC was last year. Wow. BC was very top-heavy last year. I mean, they were a great team. There's no question about that. But this BU team is a lot more complete because they're so built defensively in net and then with the playmakers on offense. But with that, have you ever seen a team take so many stupid penalties? So many being the key phrase. And BU continues to find itself in the box. And you would think that this weekend would be the weekend that BU would finally snap out of it and say, hey, you know what, we got to stop taking these stick infractions or these interference penalties. I mean, it's getting borderline ridiculous. I looked it up. They took 37 penalties in the last five games in the Hockey East tournament, 16 in the last weekend. This team is showing no signs of having any more discipline. And Jack Parker even said after the championship game on Saturday night against Lowell that his team is not playing as well right now as it was a month ago. So there is concern for BU. This team, talent-wise, across the board, the way they've played all season long, has done nothing but make me believe that it is a national title contender. But the way that it's been playing in the last two weekends has made me believe that it has the makings of a team that is ready for an upset.
I would have challenged you and your friend who's covered the league that the BC team of 07 that lost to Michigan State in the final was pretty complete. Their defense and Schneider match up at least as well with BU's defense at Milan.
Yeah, I mean, that 07 BC team was pretty darn ridiculous.
They were good.
Yeah, they were.
Anyway, your point is still understood.
I think that's one thing that I noticed, too. I mean, in watching the game, the Saturday game when they played Lowell in the championship out there, I mean, it's like they were playing Russian roulette. You know, keep taking penalties. You know, at some point...
In a 1-0 game, especially.
Yeah, in a 1-0 game. At some point, you're going to get burned. And, you know, if it happens now, you don't have a second game in a series to come back and, you know, say, oh, we'll get them tomorrow night. I mean, it's one and done. And, you know, especially with the team, you know, who knows how this is going to play out. But, you know, with a team like North Dakota, you know, obviously they can score some goals. And offensively, they've been playing a heck of a lot better over the second half of the season. If you keep giving a team like North Dakota repeated power play opportunities, you know, they're gonna burn you. So, you know, maybe think I don't even want to begin to speculate why BU thinks, you know, plays this way. But, it would be incredibly frustrating to watch.
So, actually, Ohio State and New Hampshire don't matter.
No, sure they matter. I'm just saying.
I'm just saying, too. We got to look at it.
I'm just saying.
Hey, UNH doesn't matter, I'll tell you that. But, hey.
What team are going to win this bracket?
Well, let's be serious. What about UNH inspires you to pick them? I mean...
I got nothing.
Seriously. Their last... What was it? I wrote about it earlier. I think their last five or six teams, since that team that lost to Minnesota in the national championship, how many of those teams has actually been a team that you thought, hey, this might be a team that could win the national championship? This team this year... is garbage in terms of a national championship competitor. And I mean, they're 1-3 in March. They just got swept by BC, a team that's not even in the tournament. Say what you will about that. There are a lot of other factors. But, I mean, why would UNH be a they play terrible in Manchester. So let's rule them out right now. But BU, I mean, you said if North Dakota can get things going on the power play, then, yeah, they can beat BU. It's just... Lowell had some pretty good chances to put the puck in the net. They just were a step behind, or the puck just bounced in the wrong direction. Things happened the same way against BC. I mean, BU could have been beaten last weekend.
Oh, yeah. I agree.
I think a lot of neutral college hockey fans are going to have that Sunday night game circled as potential best game of this weekend. And if Ohio State or New Hampshire's there, we're going to be stunned.
Yeah, and how many times does the potential best game of the tournament involve North Dakota?
A lot.
Exactly.
Well, Jess, North Dakota comes in with a two-game losing streak. What's going on there?
I don't want to say mailed it in, because they did put in quite an effort in that Friday night game and had the crowd going and, you know, a lot of shots and were moving the puck pretty well. Losing Matt Watkins hurt them a lot. Their coach talked about this yesterday in that changes all four lines for them. I mean, they have to juggle everything by taking Watkins out because he was such a pivotal player, you know, senior wing on the line with Zajac and Martins when the tournament started, and went out with a knee-to-knee check, and Hextall was not optimistic that he'll be back. So that really hurt. We talked about the power play. Never got going. 0-14 on the weekend. Obviously a disappointment. They got into some penalty trouble, too. Their young guys are very talented, but they're also young guys and do some stuff that you just shouldn't. Brett Hextall is going to be a great player, but has been known to chirp and get frustrated and spend inordinate amounts of time in the penalty box. So that was a problem for them, too. With that said, boy, bet against them at your own peril, because they seem to find a way in these regionals.
Joe Finley and Blake Jeffron are friends, right?
Yeah, they're close friends.
They are now.
I know we've got 16 other teams to talk about, but I got to just say, Blake Jeffrion, wearing the C on his jersey the weekend he had, wow. Got to know the folks who run the penalty box real well and just didn't seem to have a captain-like performance to me for Wisconsin, for a team that came into the weekend two wins away from getting into the NCAA tournament and got one of those two wins, and that just wasn't enough.
Yeah. Let's take a look at the last regional, the one we have not talked about yet.
We should mention Ohio State.
Yeah, let's talk about them.
They play BU.
Jim Tressel has sweet glasses.
Yeah, they're
nice vest.
Yeah, nice vest is right. They're a pretty interesting story, actually. I mean, I don't think really anybody expected that an NCAA tournament season out of them this year. I think I went through their roster, and I know I did last night, and you know, in the wee morning hours. And I think they've got something like 20 or 22 freshmen and sophomores.
Yeah.
Ridiculously young. Which, you know, really I think it's going to be tough for them to compete with Boston University, although some of those young kids are really, really good. But this is a team that...
Well, are they going to have these kids much longer? Can we point to a next year?
I think in most cases you probably can. The one who I would think that Delpy is probably the biggest threat.
Yeah.
To make a jump, but he was, you know, he had some injury things this year that kind of slowed him down. So, you know, maybe he comes back for at least another year, has a healthy season, and then goes. But you know, this team next year is regardless of whether they win or lose against BU, it's going to be a good experience for them because they're a year away and playing with basically what amounted to almost a stopgap goalie. I mean, Carlson was not the starter at the beginning of the year. It was Joe Palmer, who used to be the U.S. program in Ann Arbor. And for whatever reason, he's the first couple of years there in Columbus, he'd been an underachiever. This season, he just completely flamed out and was horrible. John Marco went with Carlson, and he's been great for them. So, it'll be a good experience for Ohio State. Probably not a great matchup against BU, but it'll be good experience for this team. They're going to be something. They're going to be a pretty darn good team next year and probably the year after that as well.
Yeah, you know what? Good for them, too. They split at Denver way back in October. They split against Notre Dame. They split against Michigan. They split against Miami. These are all, you know, tournament teams that they held their own against. And the way this math works in a strong conference and a strong strength of schedule can pull teams up, you know, those bubble teams. And if the WCHA was having a down year and the CCHA was having a stronger year, that probably pulls Ohio State into this tournament ahead of a Wisconsin or Minnesota. So yep. I'm not going to say they don't belong to be there. I think they absolutely do.
Yeah, I think, they won 20-some games. So,
I think they're a team that would have been helped to have played last weekend.
I agree.
I don't know if it would have gotten into the tournament, but from a hockey standpoint, which is really what's most important here, isn't it? I think they needed those games because they had to go out to Alaska. They played three games out there. They got shut out the last night despite getting almost 50 shots. So I think, as Jeff said, that Vermont is the team that was probably helped most by the week off. I think Ohio State was probably hurt most. You know, New Hampshire maybe also helped a little bit. How much help can, you know, is it going to be to a team that's really up against it? Man.
You know what? Hey, if UNH wins this bracket, I will personally apologize to every single player on that team and Coach Dickie Melly. I've followed that team for damn near a
wait
decade.
A second.
And that team, look, there is no reason to believe that team is making it out of that bracket.
if they make it to the Frozen Four, you have to go door to door in Durham to every house.
I will do that, and I will stay on my cousin's couch, you know, the night that I have to.
Where fireproof best? Because if they win, it's gonna burn.
It might. I'm gonna have to, undisclose my location. But you know what? Why should I have a belief that UNH is gonna make it out of that bracket? There's no reason to believe so.
I understand.
Now we all have a reason to root for the Wildcats. I love it.
Yeah, we do.
They win, I swear to God.
We are on the bandwagon.
I am taking time off from work to come out there and drive you to every house in Durham.
Before we move away from...
Long next to him.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Nate.
One thing, Ohio State, like, I don't think we'd be as dismissive of Ohio State if, say, Mercyhurst had beaten Air Force and they're playing BU and Ohio State's playing, Denver or somebody else.
That's a good point.
I think that's a compliment to BU that we're being dismissive of Ohio State's chances.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But like you said, I mean, they've faced good teams before, and they beat Notre Dame, they beat Michigan, they beat Denver. The win at Denver actually got them started on their roll.
You know what though? And Bus, if you have to continue your point, go ahead.
No.
No, I don't think there is a team. I mean, Holy Cross is the best example, the team that beat Minnesota a few years ago. But I don't think there is a team that you can look at in this tournament and say they have no shot at winning.
There is one.
Who would
that
be?
We'll get to that in the Grand Rapids Regional.
Stay tuned.
I'm just saying, on paper, you look at these 16 teams.
Northeastern fans are angry.
And there's no 1-16 team like there is in the basketball tournament. I mean, I really do believe that all 16 teams have a chance to win in the first round.
I don't. Okay, just while we're still in the
Manchester. before we move away from Manchester, let me just make one more little point about North Dakota, and I'm sorry I didn't think of this before, but at the beginning of the year, we raised questions about North Dakota's goaltending. Brad Eisness answered those questions. He was a great, great goaltender for him down the stretch. He was a deserving member of the all-rookie team in the WCHA. With that said, this weekend, a couple interesting things happened to him. Number one, he played in the playoffs away from home for the first time. He played in the big rink, for the first time. Yes, he played in the Joe earlier in the year. Somehow I don't think they had 16,000 in the Joe for his games there. So this was a whole different atmosphere he wasn't used to.
North Dakota, Michigan Tech didn't draw in downtown Detroit during a major recession.
Times are tough.
Really?
There might have been 16,000 rats in the building.
Easy.
Okay.
It's infested with rodents. What am I supposed to say?
We're 55 weeks away from a Frozen Four in the great city of Detroit.
Yeah, and I can't wait until they stick us in the rafters now.
Yeah, no comment. That's not why we're here.
So Friday night, Eisness goes behind his net to play a puck when Minnesota Duluth dumps it in. UMD's killing a power play. He leaves the puck behind the net, and so does the rest of his team. And McGregor Sharp grabs it, pots it in, just kind of a fluky goal. Alex Stalock had the great line afterwards. He says, yeah, that looks like me playing the puck early in my career. But because, Stalock got burned a lot early and still does get burned from time to time. So anyway, yesterday during the Wisconsin game, game's tied 1-1. Same deal. He goes back there to play a puck. It gets picked off. The Badgers throw it out front and score. Just based on those two plays, I kind of wonder where his head's at and how kind of gun-shy maybe he might be to go out of the crease and play pucks after that. So there's my new question about North Dakota's goaltending is how's he going to respond to the big stage?
UNH is dumping it in from everywhere.
Absolutely. Get him moving.
There we go. All right.
And we're all cheering for that, by the way, because the Wildcats are our new team.
That's right.
Well, if Rook's throwing New Hampshire under the bus, let me do the same with Bemidji. Again, I don't have Rook, you're sounding a little personal here with the Wildcats.
Oh, no. Please, do not mistake it for that. I just don't think...
They have a chance.
No, they... All right, fine. If that's how I sound, then I'm not gonna shy away from that. But still,
that's how you sound. No, you said it.
You said it.
Exactly. No,
there's a difference between tone and actually saying they don't have a chance.
Have a chance.
Here's the reasoning I am using, and it's since 2003 when they lost to Minnesota in the final. Obviously, 2002, 2003 were the two best teams that they've had in the last decade. Since then, they're 1-5 in the national tournament. They're a team that their fans traditionally say are a choke artist. I mean, you read the message boards, they want you Millie fired. I am not buying into that. I am just saying this is the typical reaction of the UNH kind of fan, which is not me, but I'm just saying that that's the typical reaction of the UNH fan. 1-5 in the NCAA tournament since those two straight Frozen Fours. Now, their last win in the NCAA tournament was in Amherst, which was, what, like 4 years ago or so?
Yeah.
This is a team that has been – was against who?
Harvard, another very strong NCAA tournament.
Yeah, exactly.
They beat Fairfield.
In Amherst. So this is a team that has had some extremely, extremely talented rosters in the last 4 or 5 years and has not gotten it done, has not gotten to the Frozen Four. This team right now has been down a little bit, and there's no question about that. Their defensemen are down. Blake Kessel is a very solid defenseman. Who knows how long he'll last in Durham, but, you know, Phil Kessel's little brother has a definite, definite career in the NHL. But I just don't know what they have stacked in front of Brian Foster that makes me believe that they're any better than the previous versions of this team. And that is the reason why I do not think that they have a chance to get to the Frozen Four.
Jeff, in the interest of full disclosure, can I ask, did your academic career at UNH end voluntarily?
It was a mutual decision.
Okay, just curious. We're wondering where all the bitterness is coming from.
No, that has nothing.
Not bitterness.
No, in all honesty, Jess, that is a very unfair question. Carrie Moorhead and Afshad Irani, the teacher who told me that my grades were not good enough, Carrie Moorhead, who was the dean, they have nothing to do with the hockey team. And look, as horrible of people as those two individuals are, we'll see them burning on a frying pan somewhere beneath the top layer of the earth. They have nothing to do with the hockey team and how I feel about them. Did he say
Rhett Rakshani kicked him out of school?
Afshad Irani. That was his name. Sorry. He was an accounting teacher.
Hey, no last names. Just say Afshad.
Yeah, Afshad. I'll just say this.
Then it'll be anonymous.
Let's not say it.
I watched a movie on pay-per-view called Afshad.
I don't know what that means.
All right.
No, that has nothing to do with the hockey team.
Exactly.
If my question was unfair, I apologize. I'm just trying to learn more about your background, Jeff. We all want to know more about you.
There's no question that was
liberal
unfair.
Media.
Well, you know what? Amidst his rage, Jeff.
Not rage.
Jeff does make a good point in the sense that this New Hampshire team is definitely not as talented as past teams.
No, you're right.
And I agree with that. So we'll say that. But now, consistent. To segue and get away from that regional, far away from that region.
Has a 3-seed ever gotten more love on a podcast?
More hate?
Well, that. More discussion.
Yeah, Cornell will in 5 minutes. No, they won't. Let me say, Jeff, I think there is one team that has less of a chance to win than New Hampshire, and it's Bemidji State. And it's not because of Bemidji State and their resume or composition. It's because I think Notre Dame is that good. They've been through it before. You know, they won in Detroit. You know, they came back from behind against Michigan and won. They were challenged against Northern Michigan and came back and won that game late with a big goal. I like this team. I think for me, they're my favorite to win this whole thing. They're my pick to win it all. And their game in Grand Rapids, a place, you know, not too far from their campus, where their students were actually pretty good in following them. I guess they have to have they have to watch something on campus. So,
oh.
I think I think Notre Dame's the best team, and that's why I think Bemidji has no chance. That's all.
I think Notre Dame is the best team, too. And, you know, we've kind of gotten that question over the...
And we talked about it on the last podcast, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And that, we got it in the ESPN.com chat not too long ago. I think they have so many different players who can do so many different things. You know, I like their depth a little bit more than BU's at forward. I like Pierce better than I like Milan. No offense to Milan, but I think Pierce is better. And I think, you know, Notre Dame plays a much more disciplined style than BU. I mean, we talked about BU and their tendency to, you know, take some thoughtless penalties, and Notre Dame doesn't do that.
Correcto.
I will say that, just jumping in, well, first of all, it's Milan because he has a mid-season pronunciation change. But I do think...
AC
I was
Milan.
We ain't talking soccer over here, Gladys. Right. But I was surprised, though, that Notre Dame did not get the number one overall seed. I thought they deserved that just a tad more than BU did.
Well,
I don't even know if it's even worth anything. But
it's not worth anything.
Yeah, but it's just the formality of it. I thought that Notre Dame was a little more deserving of the number one overall seed than BU was.
I think, well, they have mathematical things that make those decisions for us. They don't bother to watch the games. And
I have an abacus. I threw it out the window a few years ago.
And you know what? We don't. Buss and I, believe me, we're in the minority among, you know, national pollsters or analysts that we are.
Emailers.
Yeah. That's, yeah. So, I don't, yeah, but I just. I think Notre Dame's the best team. I think Cornell and Northeastern is a fascinating matchup. It may not be exciting, but it'll be good. Thiessen, Scrivens, excellent goaltending, excellent team defense. Enough difference makers up front to make plays. Nate found a great piece of a note on Northeastern that their three top goal scorers play on three different lines, which is very interesting to me. Cornell can get a little top heavy. Riley Nash is playing the best he's played in his Cornell career for sure. Evan Barlow is a guy who's always been dangerous as a forward, and he scored the goal of the year to me. I mean, this is the best goal I've seen in college hockey since Vanek's in the championship game against New Hampshire in 03 in Buffalo. I mean, it was that good. Like, amazing.
It was amazing.
I'm sorry?
When he scored that, I mean, that made it 3-2.
3-2 with 3 minutes left.
And I really think that the sense of awe of the goal helped give you the sense that, yeah, they're going to tie it.
Yeah, Cornell's going to get it.
Sometimes you see a team score and you feel like there's momentum. There wasn't momentum until he put that in.
Yes, that's correct. That was an unbelievable goal. I checked YouTube yesterday and today, still nothing. Really? Cornell, get on the horse and get that thing on YouTube. It's crazy. Crazy. Stop being the bracketologists.
You're in.
You guys are in. You're playing Northeastern. So
that is I think that's an interesting game too.
To me, it's probably going to be a right lot up like there Northeastern with... Lowell game that we saw Friday night in Boston.
Yeah, I think that's a very valid point.
Okay. Northeastern is a team that, I mean, a month ago I would have said that they are a team that could probably make it to the Frozen Four. I don't know. Just the last two weekends from what I've seen out of them, they look a little dead. They look like a team that is a bit shell-shocked from not winning the Hockey East title. And they just look tired. They're not the same Northeastern team that really dominated a good portion of the Hockey East schedule. And I really don't know what to expect out of them. Brad Thiessen could be a guy who could take over a game or two games – three or even four games at a time. He's that good of a goalie. He's got to improve his rebound control. He's got a tremendous amount of talented forwards in front of him who can put the puck in the back of the net. But, I mean, I don't know what to predict out of that Northeastern squad right now.
you know, they might be a team that is similar to Ohio State in some regards, and Vermont, I think, in some regards, that since they hadn't been through it very much, they played at such a high competitive level all regular season that maybe they're not, you know, teams who kind of go through this every year seem to be playing their best at this time of the year, and this is when it matters. Maybe they had more to do to get in this thing and have less legs right now.
I mean, yeah, I know what you're saying.
I think I saw a little bit of that, too.
On the Northeastern front, though, they played at the Garden and the Bean Pod, so they knew what they were doing when it came to the Garden, and they were playing against a Lowell team that hadn't played in the Garden since 2002. So you can throw all of that kind of stuff out the window. It just looked like a team that didn't have the legs that it had all season long.
Yeah.
No, I think that I don't know that the state, the actual, you know, being on a so-called big stage was the problem with them as much as it was. I think, and kind of following them over the second half of the year, you know, BU started to reel them in a little bit. And I think they expended a lot of energy trying to stay a step ahead of BU in the race for the regular season championship. And I think it kind of caught up with them at the end of the year. And I think we're seeing the signs of that now. You know?
No, I think that's exactly right.
So whether they can bounce back, and you know, Cornell, I think, is a tough team. Yeah, that's a tough first-round matchup for them. I think Cornell is a real solid team. I think, you know, I'd be interested to see them play Notre Dame.
Yeah, that would be a good game.
I think it'd be a good chess match between two coaches that, you know,
they know what's going on.
That really know how to put their guys in the best position to win.
Yeah,
I think it would be a great coaching matchup.
Yes, it would be. Yes, it would be. Yeah, we might see that one. That'll be a good game. I think Notre Dame is more suited to expose Cornell. The teams that Cornell struggled against this year is Yale, you know. And
yeah. Yep.
So, Nate, let's talk about Yale a little bit. I know we got to kind of circle back here into the Bridgeport region, which we'll probably talk least about. What did you think of that team? You've gotten to know them pretty well over the last month or so.
It's gone.
Okay. well, you know what? Here's
hello, caller.
Yeah. Well, call us back, Nate, if we get. we'll key in on that. Let's talk more. You know, generally, it's kind of looking through this, and you know, inevitably, because we're allegedly college hockey experts. People will ask us to make predictions on who we think will be in the Frozen Four, and it's easier to say now that the brackets are announced than when people ask us in December. But I don't know. One of the things that concerns me is that teams who have won the national championship recently, or at least have played for it, have almost – won it as the last of their goals, you know, like BC was what, fourth place in Hockey East last year or fifth?
Fourth, I think.
Yeah, fourth.
Michigan State didn't win.
Oh, they were third, I think.
Yeah, and, you know, I think that maybe one of the parts of the formula that I look at is maybe teams who have something to prove still, you know. Everyone obviously wants this trophy, you know, but I value regular season titles and playoff titles, league playoff titles too, but I don't know. I think that those teams that still have something left out on the table or something to go get are dangerous, and that's kind of why I like Princeton over Duluth, you know, in that first game.
That's a valid point, Joe, just in that, you know, Duluth had such a big celebration last night and you know, they were overjoyed and pictures taken with the trophy and I mean all of that stuff, and they're fine to do all that, but you almost wonder if maybe there'll be a little sense of satisfaction You know, nobody expected us to be here. We finished seventh in the regular season, and, you know, we're going home with a trophy and personalized T-shirts and brand-new hats and all that. Good question.
Yeah.
Personalized T-shirts?
Their names on the back?
They're for sale on the Inch website.
No, they had names on the back?
No, they had their team name on the front.
Oh, okay.
I didn't say monogrammed. That's Princeton.
Well, they didn't get. They didn't win
you
anything.
Said personalized. I thought that meant it said,
you know, like Stalock.
But you know, I think there definitely is some validity to that. In fact, you know, I can look back at in 1998 when Denver knocked off North Dakota in the Final Five. Actually, that was 99.
Yep.
But. The point being is that nobody expected Denver to make it that to the championship game. They beat CC in the quarter or in the semifinal, and then beat North Dakota. That was the year the North Dakota was, you know, had basically been lorded into the Frozen Four, or basically. Everybody thought that it was just a matter of North Dakota going through the motions and ending up with a title. Well, you know, Denver ended up beating them in the Final Five and, you know, went out the next weekend, took I think it was a 3-0 lead against Michigan in the first round of the NCAA tournament and ended up losing 5-3, you know. For that team like Duluth this time around, you know, it was just so unexpected that, you know, that was the big moment.
I saw an interesting thing last night, too, that I hadn't seen since 2001. 2001 Final Five, St. Cloud State plays this great back-and-forth game against North Dakota. Huskies build a big lead. North Dakota ties it up. It goes to overtime. In the overtime, and I still contend this, there was a pretty blatant running of the North Dakota goalie, which led to the winning goal. St. Cloud State wins. It's their first Final Five title. In fact, it's their only, to this day, WCHA title of any type, regular season or playoff. Huge celebration for them. You know, they're going in. At that time, it was a 12-team tournament. They're going in with a bye. North Dakota, after the game, Dean Blaze and the players, nobody mentioned the overtime winner in a negative light. Nobody complained about it. Nobody said, boy, we got robbed. You just got this feeling that, like, this isn't that big a deal to us, you know. The big deal to us is to go out there, win a game or two in the NCAA playoffs, get to the Frozen Four, win a game or two there. And, you know, the way it played out, St. Cloud was one and done in the NCAAs, and North Dakota made it to the national championship game.
Overtime.
And I kind of saw a little bit of that last night. And, you know, George Gwazdecki's a low-key guy in the best of times, except when he's playing in North Dakota. But
good point.
But, you know, he was very just kind of even-keeled last night and said, you know, credit Duluth, good job for them, and you know, we're getting ready for next week, and we'll talk about it then. You know, didn't seem to be too concerned, which is a little surprising because Denver had a really nice and really impressive streak at the Final Five. I didn't realize this until this weekend, but last night's loss by Denver was their first loss in Final Five play since 1997. Wow. They had won the last four Final Five tournaments they had played in, and that was their first ever playoff loss at the XL Energy Center.
Yeah.
So maybe to them it's just, you know, hey, enjoy the Broadmoor Trophy. We'll see you at Mariucci with a little bigger stakes on the line.
Yeah, they'll be there. They'll be there. But to me, on the opposite side of that, and one of the points I made earlier, I asked Guy Gadowski, Princeton's coach, about it, you know, yesterday. I said, evaluate your season. You know, they came in as, you know, they returned everybody except one defenseman from last year's team that won the playoff championship and was in the mix for the regular season title on the last day of the season. You know, nearly unanimous number one pick by coaches and media. And they finished in third place, and then they finished in third place in the tournament. I said, does your season have a feeling of satisfaction? And he said he doesn't want to answer yet because, you know, there's still more games left for Princeton, and that is a huge achievement, certainly for them, just the third time that they've ever been in the tournament. And they set a school record for wins this year. So,
Coach Tierney told him not to answer yet.
Yes, that's true. How did Princeton Lacs do this weekend?
Yeah, I've been so hockey focused.
Me too. I don't even know.
They've been great. We're back. We're back. Things are back to normal.
We're back. We're back.
We're back.
Well, we called on you earlier and lost you a little bit. So now that you're back, tell me what you think about Yale, Nate. Interested to see. You know, you've gotten into them a little bit over the last month or so.
Yeah, the thing I like about them, and looking at even at that whole region, you look at all the forwards in that region, and you know the Michigan guys, the Pelusias, and Caparusos, and Lamoureux, and Stahlberg, obviously for Vermont. So there's you got Hobie guys on every other team. But I think the best line from what I've seen, I shouldn't say this because I haven't seen Vermont, but the best line that I've seen is that Arcabello and Backman line for Yale.
Yeah, with the freshman, Brian O'Neill. So yeah, amazing.
That's a fun group to watch.
Yeah, they're really good. Really good.
Really skilled, really shifty. I think that'll be a fun game.
You know, Backman wasn't a first-team pick in the All-League team. Arcabello was actually that guy.
I was going to ask you about that because I was surprised at that. I think.
I went with Backman on my list. When we had to announce for Inch, I went with Backman. I just think he does a little bit more, but Arcabello's probably been more consistent. I think Backman has a tendency to be more dynamic. So, but they're both excellent and they're great together, no doubt about it. You know that line. It might be the this year's answer to the. Porter, Kolarik, and the big dude last year for Michigan.
Yeah.
And the Canadians, whoever
that is. Patchy Ready.
Patchy Ready. I think that might be the answer this year.
Well, and then the question becomes, though, what happens if that line can be slowed down, and can they get enough offense at that point?
I think you can. I don't know. We'll see. It's they have to get it against Vermont, which if Lowell can get it, I got to think Yale can get it.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. We'll see. But, yeah, those games will be really good. Really good in Bridgeport. I guess now that we're more general, what region are you guys most looking forward to for first-round matchups and potential second-round matchups? If you had to buy a ticket to one of these regions, where would you go? Start with Jess. Well, you wouldn't buy a ticket. Jess.
He's speechless.
He's not here. Hello?
Hello? Is he on ham radio now?
Wow.
You're back.
Am I back?
Yeah, you're back. What happened?
All right, I'm back. I got lucky. I'm covering the regional that to me is the most personally interesting, and I think it'll be some great hockey. You know, obviously, I know Denver and Minnesota Duluth pretty well. I'm intrigued by what Miami brings to the table. And Princeton, I got to say, if the band is coming out and the guy who had the plaid orange kilt and, like, the punk spiky hair is coming, I want to party with you. Whoever you are, find me. I'll be in the press box. Let's hang.
All right.
You knew he was going to pick the one with the two WCHA teams.
Ah, it's more than that. He liked Princeton last year. He said that earlier.
I absolutely liked Princeton last year, and you know if I were a Bulldog fan, and some say I am, that's a and some say I'm not, mind you.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
I've been accused on both sides this year.
That's great.
WCHA fans have a tendency to point two fingers.
They really do.
Sometimes you just have to point one back.
Yeah.
Home of the two-fingered salute.
Exactly.
So, yeah, no, that's my...
That's a good one.
That's what I'm sticking with. And Nate, it's like 20 miles from my house, so that's good, too.
That's right. Nate, you? Where did you go?
Can I be all over the map here? I want to see Minnesota Duluth Princeton.
Obviously. Nate's a Princeton alum. We can disclose this.
Yes. I want to see the second round game in the Northeast Regional. But if I was buying a three-game ticket, I'd go to the East in Bridgeport.
Yeah. Yep. Jeff?
Well, he wants to see UNH.
Want to go far, far from Durham.
Despite the fact that a lot of people in Albany might disagree with my statement, I wouldn't go to Bridgeport if
you guys paid me $1 million to do so. However, free hockey.
What?
Money bags over here turning down $1 million.
The three games that promised to be played out there in the East region look like the three best games out of any regional. I'm very happy with the fact that I'm going to Manchester, so I'm not going to complain with that, but the East Regional definitely looks like the most exciting one.
Bus, you and I will be holding down the Inch compounds here in Central New York and mid-Michigan with very active remote controls all weekend. If you had to go to a game, where would you go? Or I guess another way of asking it is which games will command your most premier attention on the good old color television this weekend?
I have to agree with pretty much almost unanimous, I believe, with the East Regional. I think a lot of things can happen there. And, like we said before when we discussed that regional, Michigan, obviously the favorite. But I like the mix, and I think there is a potential for a lot of not just tight games, but I think we could see some goals there too.
You're right.
See some, maybe a 5-4 or 4, something like that. And, the second round game I'd like to see, I think it's BU North Dakota. There's just something about North Dakota that, if somebody's going to knock them out, I want to see it. I want to see it happen. And, I'm gonna make the prediction right here. North Dakota is going to end up in the Frozen Four again. I just think BU has been playing with fire. They're going to get, with some of the undisciplined play that they have displayed over the past, especially this past weekend. And I think it's going to catch up with them at some point in time, and I think that'll happen in Manchester. And they're going to, and North Dakota's going to advance.
But you know how this is going to go. You just predicted North Dakota's going to make the Frozen Four, but right before that you said, if somebody's going to beat North Dakota, I want to see it. You know, by tomorrow there will be a message board somewhere that says, Inch says they want us to get beat.
Yeah, exactly.
We're anti-North Dakota again.
Well, I'll be the oddball in the group, like usual. And, I'm going to be watching those games in Grand Rapids. I'm okay with defensive hockey. I'm okay with good goaltending. And I like watching Notre Dame play. I like what they do. I like how they play. And I think those games, to me, make a lot of sense. I think Northeastern and Cornell are teams, I've gotten to be familiar with this year. I like how they play. And I think that'll be a great game. I think the point the Bus made, earlier that a potential, Mike Schaefer, Jeff Jackson coaching matchup and strategic matchup is really good. I think those games are going to be meaningful. I think, every battle on the wall is going to be, is going to be big. Every face-off is going to be big. Every power play is going to be big. I think that those will have a lot of interesting, flashpoints. Even though it might not be a 6-5 game, I think that, a big save on an odd man rush or a bad giveaway that turns into a scoring chance or something, a good bounce or deflection, who knows? I think that to me is going to be pretty good hockey, even though it might not be a, a 7-6 Oilers Flames, classic from the 80s. It'll be good stuff. So count me in on Grand Rapids.
I don't think that there is going to be a bad regional. And I think in the past, you could look at a regional here or there, and I'm not going to cite any direct examples right here. I just know.
Just look for one team.
No, seriously. I know where he's going with this.
You're looking at four regionals right
he's
now.
He's going with Rochester 07.
Oh, I thought he was going to say wherever New Hampshire is playing.
Wherever UMass is, because apparently that's
UMass, Clarkson, St. Cloud, Maine.
Right. No, but seriously, I think any time that you look at one of these regional, you can look at the four regionals right now, and I don't think you can pick a hands down winner 99% of the time. I think it's a very open field, and I think that it's going to wind up pretty good like that.
Yep, it'll be good. Okay. Jeff, who's your pick for the national championship? Who's going to win?
Oh, Jesus.
Jesus. does that mean Notre Dame?
I pick. Apparently. I mean, I've been covering the team all season long. It's going to be hard to go against BU right now. So, if you're going to go ahead and put me on the spot, then I'm going to have to go with BU.
Okay. Nate?
Nate's dead. I'm going to go with Notre Dame for Nate.
Okay. I already said Notre Dame. Nate says Notre Dame. I said Notre Dame already. I got to stand by that. Bus?
Notre Dame.
Notre Dame. Jess?
Notre Dame. I'll make it unanimous.
Except it's not unanimous. Bus took.
Not though.
Rook took BU.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, I'll disagree with Rook for the first time ever. Notre Dame.
Wow, Notre Dame gets Inch's seal of approval, and we know what that means.
It means to lose to Bemidji like 4-1.
Put some shekels on the Beavers. There we go.
Put some shekels on the Beavers.
I rented that movie too, Shekels on the Beavers.
Speaking of pay-per-view.
Yeah.
That's what you said.
That's what she said.
All right. Well, we've flown into deterioration here. Anybody else have anything? Rook, you seem to be full of energy tonight.
You got some jump.
I get a little jump, but I'm good. I'll wait to be provoked.
All right. By New Hampshire.
I was going to say by the Porter family, but...
Man. Jess is going to get thrown into the top floor of the White House.
Wow. You know, one of the things that we did accomplish in this podcast is talk about the tournament. I guess we should take a look back a little bit, just briefly. Final Five, any news and notes that didn't make the podcast so far, just that, or anecdotes that are worth sharing?
Nah, nothing comes to mind.
All right.
another good show, you know, fun tournament. Not a lot of goal scoring, but no, it was fine.
Well, I gotta bring something up in the leagues that have a third place game. This may, you know, come into the picture. Princeton and St. Lawrence tied yesterday in the third place game, and they had a shootout afterward. And a lot of people, Joe Marsh, it obviously didn't make a difference. The game goes down as a tie. Close followers of college hockey know that. One of the concerns that was had, and this was probably, it was poorly handled in one sense, that they didn't make an announcement in the arena. They announced that they were going to have a shootout, and St. Lawrence won the shootout, as it were, but they didn't announce for clarity and for the fact that, you know, the 3,000 people in the rink that, you know, this is a tie in the standings. I think St. Lawrence fans, you know, from chatter in the bleachers and before the game knew that a win would help them get in the NCAA tournament. The problem is I think many of those people thought that shootout win gave them the win they needed and were falsely optimistic that was the kind of result that might help them get in the NCAAs when it clearly was not, because the result was a tie. So that part of it was poorly handled. We've long said on the Inch podcast, you know our stance, that we're not big shootout fans. But to me, that's a perfect time to have a shootout. Why would you not? You know, same. I think holiday tournaments are another time that are perfect to have them. You know, give them a tie in the standings and for their, you know, regular season records and those kinds of things. But, you know, it's a good time. You're playing a team from out of region. You know, just have it. People like breakaways. I was okay with it.
I think so, too. I think there's a time and place for a shootout, and the situations that you mentioned are appropriate times and places.
Yeah.
League game, I don't like it as much.
No way.
Especially if it's going to, you know, count extra in the standings.
I asked
Joe Marsh obviously didn't like it. He had some choice comments for the whole thing.
Yeah, if you don't know what we're talking about, take a look at the ECAC hockey notebook at Inch, and Saturday's coverage includes the full transcript of what Joe Marsh said in the press conference, starting with a reference of Canasta, and moving on to the Lillehammer Industrial League. it was pretty good stuff.
If you don't know one team in ECAC hockey, read it because it's worth it.
Yeah.
It is worth it.
Better yet than a shootout, don't have a third place game.
I don't know, man.
Big go.
I don't know.
I brought that up yesterday with Dave Haxtell. He said, hey, from a physical standpoint, we did not need to play a game today. But he said, next year I might be sitting up here saying, because we won the third place game, we're getting into the tournament. So he doesn't think you should get rid of it. And Bruce McLeod let me know also, they can't get rid of it because they're contractually obligated with the arena to have five games.
Well, if they expand to 12 teams, they can have a final six instead of a final five.
There you go.
Yeah. I should be commissioner of hockey. I just solved that problem.
You've got my vote. Well, you're on my ballot. I can't promise you my vote.
I tried. Any other conference chatter that we missed?
Congrats to Wisconsin, national women's champions.
Okay. What was
I
the
think,
final?
Check out...
5-0 final. Oh. Over Mercyhurst at Aganis Arena.
We had a great photographer there. But check out the Hockey East notebook from the BU Lowell championship game, because there are still a lot of people who do not realize what happened with that disallowed goal against Lowell, and pretty sure Inside College Hockey is the only people who have talked to Hockey East Commissioner Joe Britannia about that goal. So if you want an actual explanation of what went on there, Inside College Hockey is the only place that will give it to you.
Is the explanation we screwed up?
Well, you can look at it in two completely different ways. The first way is, yes, they screwed up badly because the puck went in the net after or before the whistle blew. And there's no question about that based on the TV feed. And I wrote it, and it could be possible, I don't believe it, but it could have happened, that another whistle may have blown before then, and it could have gotten drowned out by crowd noise, a skates noise, whatever. But based on the official's explanation that the whistle blew before the puck went in the net, it's completely bogus, and they screwed up badly. But based on Joe Britannia's explanation in that the secondary issue is that the net came off its moorings before the puck went in the net, and that would have blown the play dead. And then when Kier Milan said that his glove was on the puck for a while and the officials didn't blow the play dead and allowed the play to move on once the puck got wrestled from his glove, I mean, you realize that eventually the play should have been blown dead. So it should not have been a goal. Based on the officials' review, they screwed up badly. But, I mean, bottom line, it should not have been a goal.
Also on that play, Brett Hull's skate was in the blue paint.
So there you go. So it was not a goal no matter what.
Actually, the historical precedent is if Brett Hull's skate is in the crease, it's good. It's a good play.
No, they screwed up badly.
Yeah, agreed. But.
No, look, I left that game going down to the press conference thinking that Lowell got completely screwed. I really did. And I said that to a bunch of people. And then when I talked to Joe Britannia, and he gave me the explanation that he gave me, I felt satisfied that they got the call right. Maybe Joe was swaying things, I don't know. But I'm taking Joe at his word of the fact that the net got lifted off of its moorings and the play should have been blown dead. But it still does not take away from the fact that the puck went in the net before the whistle was blown. So they screwed up badly. This was an Ed Hockley kind of thing, a Tim Donaghy kind of thing. that their explanation was completely bogus, and it leaves a lot of ground for people to question it. But either way, regardless of what happened, the puck, you know, it was a no goal.
Enough said. Anything else? What happened to our podcast host?
I think we've lost our host. We're hostless.
Wow.
Well, who wants to take over? Do we have an assistant host?
No, I don't think we do. I don't have an A on my...
Hey, I'm sorry. I'm back. I had muted my microphone and did not realize it.
There he goes. What did you say while you were yelling and what was muted?
Oh, you know what I was saying was, Rook, help me out with some proper nouns here. You say they screwed up, but Joe Bertagna got it right. Who is the they?
The officials. The officials screwed it up. Tim Benedetto, who said that he blew his whistle before the puck went in the net, screwed up.
Okay.
Scott Hansen, who was the replay official, screwed up by saying that the whistle was blown before the puck went in the net. Even though they, or according to Joe Bertagna, they watched the different angles and then said that they saw Benedetto blowing his whistle. Now, this is strictly from a visual angle. They saw
it. You can see a guy blowing his whistle.
Well, yeah. I mean...
They looked on the replay and there were those little musical notes coming up.
If we can move on from this without the "that's what she said" comments, they saw Benedetto making the blowing motion, and the play should have been blown dead. So look, there were apparently we could not move on without that.
Right,
so
you set it up. You put it on the tee. I had to hit it out of the park.
Nope.
I was gonna go on there without the preface. Come on now.
All right.
Hey, it was Bertagna's explanation was perfectly suffice in my book. The official's explanation was completely bogus, and you know what? I kind of I'm not satisfied.
No, I get it. The initial call was not good.
The initial call was terrible. And if they
hold on. That's my next question. Now, when they went to review, were they signaling goal and then went to review and blew it off? Or was the initial call washed out, but we're going to take a look?
No, it was goal, and then they went to review.
No, but, Jeff, I think that the goal light came on, but I don't think the ref signaled.
The refs weren't pointing.
No, the refs
were washing the ref. There was a ref on the when I was on the far side of the ice, and looking at the net, the ref that was on the right side, and I don't know if it was Benedetto, I don't think it was Benedetto, was pointing towards the net as if it were a goal. So it was a goal according to him. There is a two-referee system in Hockey East. So at least one referee said it was a goal. And if you look at it, basically – what I wrote in my notebook is that if Hockey East, if the officials said, hey, the net came off the moorings, it's no goal, the play was dead, that's it. Or if, you know, Milan had his hand on the puck and the play should have been blown dead and the whistle didn't work or whatever the kind of garbage that they came out with, it would have been a whole lot more suffice than what they said about the play being blown dead by the whistle, because as Nesson and the TV feed showed, you know, that argument is completely bogus.
Well, there you go.
I think the other referee was behind a grassy knoll.
There was more than one referee.
Yeah, there was. The second referee was pointing from behind the grassy knoll.
Yes, she was. Anything else, people? Oh, quick. Gotta say, I did not vote on the ECAC Hockey All Tournament team, which I have no problem with whatsoever. But I do have a problem with Jared Semenoff being on it. Cornell defenseman, I thought he was lousy. I like Jared Semenoff. I've named him to my Inch, you know, midseason All League teams, and pumped his tires on Inch podcasts. And I think he's really underrated as far as defense go. He didn't have his best weekend, and I don't know where people came up with that. I mean, he had a secondary assist on the overtime goal because he fanned on a point shot, and I think that's what people remember because they had to name a defenseman and weren't watching the games.
Yeah, that happens a lot.
It does happen a lot. It's actually pretty disgraceful. But he was junk. He shouldn't have been on the team.
They should trade him to UNH.
Jimmy Martin was great for Yale. It was absolutely great. He made a game-saving play and on Friday, which I wrote about, and he didn't get mentioned. And he had two or three points on the weekend. Whatever.
Quick stick salute to Denver radio man Jay Stickney, who's a great guy and a friend of Inch. I was doing a little interview with him during one of Denver games over the weekend.
Friend of
he asked me, yeah, absolutely. He asked me on air how the pairwise system worked, and I just kind of went, who knows? And his response was, doesn't it all come down to the Palm Beach voters? So he's podcast material, that's for sure.
Yeah. Oh, he's material, all right.
Stickney.
We have 10 Hobie finalists.
We have 10.
Probably should mention that quickly.
Yes.
Well,
Yeah, we did. Yes, we did. We mentioned. Pleased to see David McIntyre on that list.
Yep.
If, the Hobie people produce a video, with highlighting, you'll see it in the rinks if you go to any regionals this weekend, and it's probably on the Newfangled Internet or places if you want to see it. Just basic brief bios on the 10 finalists and some highlights, and watch the David McIntyre goals in that highlight video, those of you who haven't seen Colgate all year. You'll see why he's on there. It's good. Good player.
Interesting choices.
Well, let's talk about the guys who got left off. It starts with, I guess, Ryan Stoa of Minnesota. And no Notre Dame guys. We had trouble all year saying, who would you pick from Notre Dame? I guess the answer at the end of the day was nobody, which I don't agree with. But
I think the one that was probably most surprising to me was Caparuso over Palucha.
Yeah, that one's pretty big for me.
And you've been on the Palucha bandwagon since last year.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
He plays with
a little bit of an edge. He's an agitator at times. I think he might rub people the wrong way, but nobody would want to play against him. I know that.
No.
And you know what else I've been saying, Bus, I value goals more than assists, and Palucha's got 30 something assists, and Caparuso's got 25 goals, to where Palucha has 11 or 12 or 13, something like that. So
yeah,
maybe that has something to do with it. I don't know, but that was to me a little bit confusing. Certainly not saying that Louis Caparuso does not deserve to be on that list. He's an excellent player. The other thing is that list is generated by ballots from coaches. And if you know anything about college hockey coaches, they like to talk to each other. So there's a lobby. I mean, when you see that Jamie McBain is the only WCHA player on that list, that means they got together and said, this is the guy we want out of this league ahead of anybody else. And that's how it had to be with the voting to end up that way. And Jess, why would you think that they would choose him? Is he really the best player in the league? And I just, what would you think?
He was my pick. It was a tough year. I'll be quite honest. There wasn't a great player. There were several very good players. But tough choice. But hey, it makes sense if you're going to get one Hobie finalist. It's the guy that they pick for MVP.
Yeah.
And I guess I'm okay with it. I mentioned this in my notebook, but 11 years ago, Curtis Murphy, a defenseman from North Dakota, who, if you haven't heard of him, that's okay, but he was the league MVP, and he was the league's lone Hobie finalist that year in another kind of down year for top-level individual talent.
Yeah. I'll tell you a year that wasn't...
Here's my question, by the way, because you talked about that video. Did Chad Johnson do anything other than shootouts this year?
Yeah, because a ton of touchdown passes.
Ocho.
Ocho Cinco.
Ocho Cinco. But in the video, I mean...
He demanded a trade a few times.
Well, have you been to Fairbanks? Anyway.
Yes.
I would do.
But no, I mean, that was my disappointment with the video, is they showed four Chad Johnson clips, I think it was, and I think all of them were shootout stuff. And it's like, well, what about in actual games when there's, like, more than one body you have to concentrate on and whatever.
Yeah.
Best of luck to him. Not saying he's not a good goalie. I just, very small sample of what he did.
Yeah. Something I saw recently was in a rink looking at some, anyone who's, a lot of fans have probably seen these All-American, when players get All-America, there's these fancy certificates that they get from the American Hockey Coaches Association, and it lists all the All-Americans for that year. Listen to this, 2002, the West Region first team. This was not a year that the West was short on individual talent. Goalie, Ryan Miller, defense, Mike Komisarek and Jordan Leopold, and forwards, Mike Camilleri, Mark Hartigan, and John Pohl. Not too shabby. I'd take them.
Yeah, that's a pretty good club.
They could play for my team. That's all.
Indeed.
So, two Hobies on that list, a couple Stanley Cup winners, and one of them married Chrissy Wendell. So,
yeah. Well, John Pohl, he had 80 points that year.
Yeah, he did.
That's a lot of points. All right.
Somebody just sit on a pillow?
What was that?
Oh, my. What? My microphone is
fighting back?
Yeah.
It's had enough.
It went akimbo on me.
It's had enough.
Hey, should we give a little teaser of what we got in store for in Washington here?
How about this week with Inch, too?
I'd like to know what's going to go on in Washington, but you know what? I think I'd be better off left to know when April 7th comes around.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
All right, well, wait. Well, plug, you know, tell people that, or I can tell people.
Yeah, go ahead.
Mark down Hamilton's on 2nd Street, because they're going to have college hockey specials all week. East versus West college hockey specials. Sam Adams or Line and Kugels, $3 pints, $12 pitchers.
Hamilton's is a tremendous place. I will mark my word for that one.
It's Rook approved.
It's the
and Nate approved.
It's the local Badger Bar.
Oh, really?
One thing about DC here is you got every alumni group in the world.
Yeah, that's true.
They all have to pick their bars, and this one's the Badger Bar.
The Badger Bar in Denver was awesome. I love that place. It wasn't even a Badger Bar. It was just like it celebrated the state of Wisconsin.
Oh, yeah. I know what you're talking about.
The place was great.
Swankies.
Yeah. Great place. I liked it so much I went back in June.
Nice.
No lie. And it was before a Rockies-Brewers game. Guess what the dominant fan base was in there?
Brewers.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, awesome. I'm good at guessing.
It was a good time.
What we have coming up this week.
He's the podcast host.
That's why I'm the podcast host. I'm a good guesser. The Inch Power Rankings will be released on Monday night. We have now put the Power Rankings tonight because of our NCAA tournament coverage.
Thank goodness.
We will also have Found in a Cocktail Napkin with tournament haikus, one on every team in the tournament. Last year we managed to get a Minnesota State one in there, and we'll have some other general tournament thoughts as well. So please check out the haikus on Monday night on our cocktail napkin.
Wish list during the day, Monday and Tuesday.
That was Tuesday, Wednesday project. Whatever. It is. Oh, you're in Toronto.
It is.
It's Tuesday, Wednesday.
Okay. It's Tuesday, Wednesday.
Bus, you're on that because I got morning skate.
Only two people read it anyway. So
hey, count me too. I read it.
Oh. Yeah. All right.
Yeah, Inch wish
list. Definitely two people read it.
Yeah.
I mean, that makes three.
Is there Tim Hortons in D.C., Nate?
No.
Darn it.
There's probably a guy named Tim Horton.
Yeah, but there's Nugget Donuts, so you'll be fine.
In the arena.
In the rink.
In the rink and outside. So you can stop before you go in.
Wow.
Will security shut down the bringing outside food and beverages into the rink?
Probably.
Hey, I know it's damn near 6 a.m., but are there any teams outside of UL who probably deserve to be in the tournament and who kind of lost their case that anybody wants to talk about?
No. If they deserved to be in it, they would have been in it.
Well, no. I remember last year at this time we were talking about how Wisconsin should not be in the tournament, and there have always been teams at this time of year that probably should not be still skating, and, you know, I was just asking if everybody else had any feelings of likewise.
I don't. I think they got the right teams in. I mean, Ohio State's clearly the last at-large team to get in.
They did the right thing.
Power play goal.
Yeah. Yeah, score power play goal, Lowell.
Hey, well, that's why I'm on the tournament, the podcast host.
They had a chance to sing for their supper, and they did not.
Oh.
People in Lowell don't sing, so we can get that down right now.
Anyway, yeah. We're good. I think we're good. Thanks for listening to Selection Sunday Inch Podcast. It's been great once again. Hopefully we were not biased against your team or region. We talked about every single team in this tournament, and it'll be a great one. Follow Inch all week long. Be sure to check out our preview capsules for great, you know, everyone's a regional fan, and they follow their league, and they follow their team. If you need to know about someone else, check out Inch. We've got what you need to know on every single team in this tournament. And for Mike Eidelbus, Nate Ewell, Jess Myers, and Jeff Howe, my name is Joe Gladyszewski. This has been the InsideCollegeHockey.com podcast.